So I was here just before Christmas one year, and it was completely deserted in the evening. And then there was a shop that stayed open late. And I thought, oh, well, there we are. That surprised me. And it was open when everything else... do you know what shop it was? The wool shop. The wool shop stays open. That's the only shop that stays open, because at night you don't need luxuries like bread. But you probably will have a sudden urge to buy alpaca pyjamas. And so, at this point, I'd like to introduce Juliet. And your role in Linton and Lynmouth is...
wool and socks.
But it goes all over the country, so people from all over the country are buying wool that comes from Linton.
Yes, they like to hoard it in secret places around the house.
Oh, right, so what sort of places?
There was a lady at a show who told us she'd found a new place to hide it from her husband. She'd taken off the side of the bath. And hidden her wool there. She'd filled the loft. And the freezer in the garage.
And the freezer
and
in the
shed.
Garage. And the poor husband had no idea then.
No.
And so is it on your conscience at all that you're feeding this addiction?
No.
And thanks very much, Juliet. Now, do you know, the novel Lorna Doone is set round here. You can buy that in all the gift shops. And you can see why, from its opening pages, it just conveys this lovely sense of warmth and welcoming to outsiders when the father tells his son that there's been a hanging. So the boy asks who was hanged, and his dad says, I quote from the book, "Nobody to make a fuss about, he's from the other side of the moor." It's quite right. You can't go concerning yourself with people getting hanged if they're from as far away as Bampton, can you? Also, in a lovely book I've got there called North Devon Stories that gives a sense of the camaraderie of this region. It says, "The parish of Combe Martin has a greater abundance of ignorant villagers than any other village." The sort of warmth that you feel as soon as you... If you take a little glance at the local websites where Linton and Lynmouth people discuss the area, there's a website called Lynn Valley News, and it's easy to see that you're very, very affectionate towards tourists, holidaymakers. You only have to look at the way you approach the massive global issues of the day. Now, people in other parts of the world, they waste their time on trivia like civil wars and all that. But even though you have goats to worry about, you still find time to confront the dilemmas at the heart of human existence. So Val opened up one discussion on the website with this question. Why have the council put a height restriction on the Esplanade car park? Deliberately trying to discourage visitors and surfers. And then Chris replied, and here I apologise if the intellectual level of the debate goes above some people. Chris replied, "Who cares about surfers?" Followed by Will, who said, "I bet it doesn't survive the summer. My money's on a Land Rover with a roof box taking it out." There's pages and pages and pages, like one of these debates between philosophers in 1500 about whether there's a soul, and it's all summarised beautifully at the end by Bernard. And I'll take a random guess that Bernard's here. Who said, "Well, it's nice to see so much public debate on this issue, at least it's not about effing goats." And, James, is James here? So, James, now you write on the Lynn Valley News.
What have I done?
No. Well, I just want to know, what's the car park issue about then? Where do you stand on it? Are you for this sort of...
I'm not. I'm more inclusive. Power to the surface. Get them in there. Yeah.
But also, I'm his wife, so I can speak. Also...
No, I should confirm that law was changed here in a parish council. Last January.
I drove 40 round miles to change that law. We have to get car park wardens in from Ilfracombe and Barnstable now because the local car park men know everyone too personally to ticket them. Oh. And they weren't making enough revenue. So people have to drive 20 miles to come and fine us for parking in the wrong places.
Oh, that's brilliant. Thank you. I found the history of Linton just astonishing, because from the moment that this became a tourist area, it attracted the romantic poets, the authors, and you can be very proud of that. Travel companies were set up to bring people from places such as Bristol. This is one account of those travel moments that I found in the book there, Glimpses of the Past. It says, those stagecoach drivers were wonderful men. There was one, Warwell, who drove the coach from Linton to Bridgewater. I once started with him very early in the morning. We left Linton about 6 a.m, and Warwell had a beer at Countersbury, and another at Portlock, then another at Minehead, Dunster, Willetton, Putcham and Cannington. He consumed more in the two-hour wait at Bridgewater, and on the return journey had hot spirits in all of those places again. We reached Linton and he congratulated himself on his restraint in the matter of drink. Some drivers have spirits with their beer on the journey out as well, he said. And I can't abide such drinking ways. North Devon was home for Henry Williamson, who wrote Tark of the Otter. The North Devon tourist website describes his impact. He says, Williamson's reputation as a writer was affected in the wake of his support for the British Union of Fascists, which he joined in 1937. And I mean, who would have thought that joining the British Union of Fascists might affect your reputation? But leaving that aside, his accounts of the gritty little otter are just beautifully described. And I love this opening to the tale of Art Tarka as he meanders by the River Lynn. I think this is beautiful. Tarka searched and scurried this way and that in his wandering, wearisome quest to build a new home. And as he clambered and slithered upstream through nettles to the muddiest of banks, he decided he'd have even more space if he invaded Poland. I love the fact that I know there is at least someone in this room going, is that how it goes? But the most important writers to come here, I think, were the poets. Wordsworth, Coleridge, all the ones there's a chance people might have heard of, and especially Percy Shelley. Shelley was a radical. He supported the French Revolution, and he came here with his friend Dan, and they went to Barnstable to hand out revolutionary leaflets. Now, whatever you think of his ideals, you can't question his tactics. We must create revolution. Where shall we start? Surely Barnstable. That's what anyone would do. Now, to evade government spies, according to his biography, he launched pamphlets into the sea and sent others into the air attached to hot air balloons, speeding them on with the good wishes of a song. So never mind revolution, he invented the drone. But Shelley's mate Dan got caught and he got arrested and received 6 months in prison. And Shelley was paying some money to him to make his sort of prison life a bit more comfortable. And when he ran out of money, Shelley was then bailed out by his landlady, Mrs. Hooper, who organised a collection amongst the neighbours in the place that's now Shelley's hotel down the bottom of the hill. And while he was there, Shelley wrote a poem to Linton called Ode to a Coastal Idyll. Which I'll read. As Mount Olympus, Linton cliffs descend as if from heaven, stretching forth o'er Lynmouth streets and out across through Devon. Then time to climb back up the hill past elm and hanging larch. I'd go back on the railway, but it's shut till sod in March. But all of this, through centuries of farming and fishing and tourism and cliff railways, has been leading to one issue that dominates the area, that must feel it has no resolution, like Israel and Palestine, gnawing away at generation after generation, goats. Because Linton is the home of feral goats. Who is for the goats here? Yeah. And who's not keen on the goats? Yeah. Shoot the lot. Okay, well, that's a moderate view. Is Rupert about? So, Rupert, you are part of the Feral Goat Preservation Society, is that right?
No.
In my defence, he's sat here in a room where someone's just gone, shoot the lot! I wouldn't own up to it. It's like any terrorist organisation. We don't have members, we just have supporters. I don't want anyone to know it was me in the mask. The people underestimate the goats. The council tried to stop goats wandering into certain areas by putting down a cattle grid. How is this going to stop the goats? They spend all day balancing at 90-degree angles. They can climb trees. You might as well have put down a box of fudge on the floor and gone, well, they won't get over that. And the boat trip. You can see this fencing that the council put up that cost £30,000 to keep the goats out from the far end of the cliffs. And Matthew, who takes the boat out, told me, you know, the next day after it was put up, every one of the goats just walked right across it. More of a threat was that when their numbers grew, it was decided they should be managed. This word, managed. Which meant culling some of them. And most people sort of accepted this, but then one of the goats was shot in the Esplanade car park. What was that for? Did the council award the contract for culling them to a Mexican drugs cartel? And managed. It's a bit Sopranos, isn't it? The people sit at the back of the crowd going, hey, I haven't seen Elsie the nanny lately. How's she doing? She got managed. The other theory about what happened is it was nothing to do with keeping down goat numbers, but this goat had blatantly ignored the height restriction and the council. Can I just ask, the people who don't like the goats, do you not see any sort of beauty in them at all? They're just a nuisance.
No. I think they can be very good companions at times.
So you're a bit mixed up, really, with them. A bit Oscar Pistorius. I don't know which to do with them. One sad note is that sympathy for the shot goat receded when it was revealed he was nothing to make a fuss about as he was from the other side of the moor. But this to me seems where the controversy starts. Who would want to protect the goats? So, a vet replied to this article, rather than kill billy goats, it would be better to cull the mayor of Linton and Lynmouth. Astonishingly, even that didn't calm things down. Then another man was quoted as saying, if anyone is to be culled, it is to be Mrs. Hibbert from the council and not the goats. One solution tried was keeping goat numbers down by giving them contraception, wasn't it? Because it said once you've listened to people here, you know it's not that unlikely that some people here will try to educate the goats to go into chemists and say, now, as it's spring, I'm going to need 6 packets this week, please. I shan't need lubricant when you're doing it while clinging onto a cliff at a 60-degree angle. Let's be honest, you need all the grip you can get. It's Kevin about. It's goat contraception Kevin. I'm sure that's what he's known as locally.
He's the fire warden.
Is the fire warden?
Yeah.
What a marvellous pair of jobs. I'm the fire warden and I organise goat contraception. Is Kevin about? Don't tell me Kevin's shy when you're job putting condoms on a goat. There was a local woman who contributed towards the contraception fund, and this, I've written exactly what she said. She said, goat contraception as expenses was quite hard to explain to the accountant. And she was at the centre of the controversy because one of the goats ate her sister's Christmas tree. And this was announced in the local newspaper as an infamous herd of goats which has terrorised 2 villages is to be brought under control with the pill. So the business is paid for the goat contraception. No one. It's silent. That's like going into a village in Syria and asking who's in ISIS. I'm sure the police go, no, we've tried, Mark, nobody knows nothing around here. Goats get blown up, other goats are on the pill. Goats disappear, the goat get blown up in front of your eyes. You ask everyone, nobody saw a thing. We have to get goat people in from Ilfracombe, 20 miles away. Honestly, Linda, I'm going to be honest with you here. Like, I did one of these shows in Derry, and people were more forthcoming there. I mean, they do a bit of damage. What's the worst damage anyone's had with a goat?
They've eaten all my brassicas.
What have they done? They've eaten your...
My cabbages.
They eat your cabbages? Yeah. Well, when a cabbage gets eaten, it's thoroughly understandable that an entire species should be obliterated. So what are we going to do? We've got to address this, Linda. There's got to be a solution. Is a compromise possible?
No.
Does... No, someone said. What is so impressive about the community here is, despite these differences, the whole town pulls together, most notably, despite all of the goat issues, for the famous annual Linton pantomime. And I was told about this by James, who helps write it, and it's co-written by a doctor. I started watching Cinderella on YouTube, and the first song starts, I quote it exactly... I close my eyes, pull back my foreskin. How old are you, Linton? Want to be treated like a grown-up town? There's a convent here. What would the nuns think of that?
The goats don't eat their vegetables.
The goats don't eat their vegetables, no. They've got an electric fence, the nuns.
One of the nuns takes photographs of the goats.
No, one of the nuns is a very good photographer, and she's taken a photograph of in the Valley of the Rocks. I don't know why you think it's so funny, Roger. Three goats on a rock like that.
Oh, so she's saying that the nuns take photograph of the goats. Do you know what? I'm becoming, institutionalised. You know when you're in an asylum and eventually it seems normal. I realise that's what's happened to me. 3 days ago, I mean, what is this place?
When's this broadcast?
It's going out live. This is not only an area so dramatic and captivating that it attracted an entire generation known as the Romantics, it is also extraordinarily relaxing. That makes no sense, that, after my last hour. It also can be extraordinarily relaxing, as long as you don't need anything. You can see millions of stars, whereas if you live in the city, you think there are only three. So I shall leave you, Linton, with the start of my favourite chapter in Lorna Doone, in which the father in the story describes his thoughts on spending a day in your fine town. And I'll leave you with this. Thank you very much. John Doone ambled to the cowshed with a brisk, nonchalant air that morning, the dark Devonian aroma of 100 or more deposits from his cattle unable to extinguish the lingering effervescent scent of Lorna's hair. Later, he would ride into town to meet her, unaware his horse would be unable to complete the journey due to a height restriction on the horse park. Lorna had yet to recover from the severe mental fatigue she'd encountered following her stressful and slightly unsuccessful efforts in running the Feral Dodo Preservation Society, which she denied she'd ever been a part of. At this moment, Mother entered in a state of some distress. "There is a great commotion in the town," she gasped, "for a mail coach has arrived from Exeter, and the mailman, upon delivering the letter, was attacked by a woman with a satsuma. He is in the most frightful condition, and it is feared he may not live." Father shouted to the stable boys that they may go and fetch help. "You must travel post-haste to Ilfracombe. This is of great urgency," he cried, to which the boys replied, "What?" No, you've gone again. Say it again. No. Sorry, mate, I've lost you. Thanks very much.
Mark Steele's In Town was written and performed by Mark Steele.
With additional material by Pete Sinclair.
It was produced in Linton by Carl Cooper.
It was a BBC Studios production.
I'm not sure this should go out or the government will come down and cordon you off.
1977 in Gibraltar.
I'm originally from Gibraltar.
I've lived in Gibraltar since 1977.
I've never been accosted by a monkey.
Monkeys?
They've screamed at me and stuff, and I've never been attacked by them.
All of a sudden, just a monkey just jumped on his head and started pulling on his hair.
Two types of wind.
Yeah. The poniente and the levante.
I have long hair. You can actually wake up and say, ah, today's an easterly wind, just by how my hair looks.
I like Morrison's.
Morrison's.
The fish and chips. It's the best of both worlds, the UK culture, and obviously the Spanish.
Spain, Gibraltar, Spain, Gibraltar.
Mark Steele's In Town.
Thank you so much, and welcome to Mark Steele's In Town, which this week, extraordinarily enough, comes from a cave in the middle of the Rock of Gibraltar. And this is the furthest I've ever been with this show, and it is so exciting at last to get away to lovely Spain. That is the only possible way of opening that show. No, I'm only joking, Gibraltar. I don't mean to be insensitive at all. Please let me introduce myself properly and politely. Bienvenidos a Mark Steele's In Town. Que esta semana ha venido a exótico Gibraltar, el sitio más lejano en el que he estado con este show. Es tan emocionante venir hasta España. It does actually say on the script, it is possible that the show ends there. And then the rest of the show will be 28 minutes of booing. Now, one of the first things that you can't help noticing when you come to this country of Gibraltar is it is tiny. Now, obviously, if you're going to try and squeeze a whole country into an area that's only 2 miles long, it makes perfect sense to choose somewhere where 90% of the place is an uninhabitable cliff face. The next thing is, while you love to embrace the continental Mediterranean culture, if you look carefully around Gibraltar, you can still spot the odd hint of Britishness. There are British phone boxes and British policemen and 40 cafes and pubs with huge boards that say, British fish and chips! In case you're worried they'll give you some horrible foreign fish with a herb on it. And there's a chocolate shop that says, British chocolate! Because who wants chocolate from Europe? What do they know about chocolate? And you expect the chemist to go, we sell British anus oil! You don't want nothing Spanish going up there! And the whole country, at first glance, can appear to be like one long duty-free shop. In the shop windows, there are barrels of vodka for 60 pence and boxes of 8,000 fags with a sign on them saying, just take them, we don't want money. They just take up space, just take. And barrels of perfume for a pound, so you die at 42 but smell gorgeous. So it's a wonderfully unique country that from one end to the other, I could do the whole country in one sentence. It goes lighthouse, mosque, cannon, rock, monkeys, cannon, fort, pub, duty-free shop, cannon, duty-free shop, cannon, runway, high street, other bit of runway, Spain. Even so, the first thing that strikes you here is the views from Gibraltar are stunningly beautiful, because once you're up the hill, you can see Spain, which is really nice. Now, Gibraltar is, of course, tied with Britain, but not to the Britain that British people live in. When someone who's been brought up here goes to Britain, they must think, I don't understand, I've been here 3 hours, not a single aeroplane has crossed the high street. Someone who worked here told me I lived in La Línea across the border. If late for work, you could lie and say a jump jet was crossing the street. You had to wait. There's all sorts of things that are different. One thing I love here, though, is a lot of the Britain that you're attached to, like the telephone boxes and the British bobbies, is a Britain from the 1970s that doesn't really exist anymore. Those phone boxes have gone, the big English breakfast. You don't get so much in England now. Lots of the pubs you have here in England, they'd have shut. And you're going to get such a shock when you find out what happened to Rolf Harris. Charm of Gibraltar. It's like a slightly warped England from 38 years ago. You can still buy Spam here. You dip chips in cocktail sauce as if you're thinking, it's pink, it must be exotic. It's so 1970s, there's a dummy in the Glasshouse T-shirt printing shop that everyone loves because it has huge breasts. But all the blokes say things like, ha-ha, I wouldn't mind sailing between them pillars of Hercules. And there's some quaint customs here that are from the 1870s, such as the amount of tax you pay. Although you don't really pay tax, it's more of a tip, isn't it? We leave the government £10 a year just as a gesture of goodwill. But Gibraltar is most famous for being a rock, and right now we happen to be in a theatre in the caves, in the middle of the Rock of Gibraltar. Top that question time. This is honestly, I've been doing this job quite a while. This is the first time I've ever been unable to get into the dressing room because of monkeys. It is extraordinary, and I'll talk to someone later about these caves and the rock, because it does cover almost all the country, the Rock of Gibraltar. That's about 2 miles long, with 30,000 people living here, surrounded on three sides by Spain and on the fourth by sea, which is why everybody has made sure over the years that relations with Spain are always friendly and full of good spirits. On both sides, the motto seems to be, nothing's too much trouble for our neighbours. For example, it seems the guards at the border with Spain frequently go out of their way to make sure hundreds of you spend a delightful 4 hours enjoying the wonderful view of the back of the airport without moving an inch. The drip just comes straight up. I'm 5% stalactite now. Now, I'd like to introduce someone who I'm sure lots of you know, Tito, who gives guided tour of the caves. What was the story you were telling me yesterday about someone who was stuck in the...
In the queue. Well, it was a friend of mine who was going across to Spain, and the policeman there, the Spanish policeman, said, look, you can't come in here. I said, why not? He says, because that photograph in the passport is not you. He said, look, mate, this was me when I started in the queue, you know?
Thanks, Tito. I'll be talking to Tito later on about the caves, but I like the way lots of you go to such lengths to bring the cultures together by speaking in this sort of half-Spanish, half-Englishy sort of language. I love you sort of hear conversations with people are saying things like, the sunset there is color of love, bellissimo, but a leaking doy, careful of getting squashed by plane in the high street, El Rejol. El Rejol, del Matillo, no tiene cuerda, you can walk up rock, but watch the bleeding monkeys, muchas mono, they right pain in the arse, steal your twigs if you're not careful. Norma de la lata de mañana, uno bueno deos, begin with full English breakfast with egg, chips, bacon, black pudding, fried slice, dos grando te por favor. I went over the border. I went over there last night into Spain. It's so weird. You walk across the runway. This isn't normal Gibraltar. You have to stand there, look right, look left, look right again, check there's no easy jet planes coming, flash your passport, then there's all bars with people going, bienvenidos a España, and you order some tapas, and it's like you've gone through the back of a wardrobe into another world. 5 minutes ago, I was next to a bloke going, point your John Smith's and some British cheese and onion crisps, please, mate. If you come onto the runway in a plane rather than walking across it, when you get it, it's a fun landing, isn't it? It's slightly alarming before you set off. If you look up Gibraltar runway on the internet, the two things that come up are 7 most extreme airports and world's scariest runways. So as you come into land, you hear, this is your captain speaking. We're currently descending into Gibraltar Airport. We'll be scraping against the side of the mountain. You may feel the odd bump. Then we'll be lost in the mist for a minute. Then we go upside down before landing on a runway that's around half the length of the plane. And you like it like that. The tourist brochures say things like, you'll love the terrifying approach to the airport. The inevitably forgotten fun of desperately ringing your loved ones. But now everything's confused, isn't it? Because the British people you so much want to be a part of have gone and turned you over because they voted to leave the EU. So the people of a country that likes to be more British than the British have said to the British, no, hang on, don't be that British, or we might end up not being British. In general, though, the more that places went, we're British, fly the Union Jack and be proud, the more they voted to leave. And the more liberal and middle class they were, the more they voted to stay, which technically makes Gibraltar now the most namby-pamby, politically correct, metrosexual place in the world. One thing we should clear up before we go any further, for anyone listening, there are many people, it seems, who seem to believe that Gibraltar is an island. Now, obviously, these are people who have no idea about anything that happens outside Britain. For example, the London Foreign Office, who recently placed this advert for a job in Gibraltar. History plays an intrinsic part in this area of European affairs and considered alongside the island's long-standing sovereignty dispute. The island? What sort of foreign office is that? It's only tiny. It must be an island. Like India. Maybe someone from the foreign office tried to sail right round it. Went, well, no wonder these Gibraltar types are annoyed with the Spanish. The buggers have blocked the sea up. The main worry now, of course, about the EU is how it affects your dealings with Spain. And you get a lovely sense of how well you get along from newspaper columns like this one in the Panorama. That's controversial. Before 711 AD, Gibraltar had various rulers. Then we were in the hands of the Moors for 751 years, ruled by Spain for only 200 years, and been British for 310 years. If anybody has an historic claim to Gibraltar, it's the Moors. So to annoy the Spanish, let's go for joint sovereignty with Morocco. And you would do that. Just for the devilment of it, you would do that. I love how you had a referendum in 1967 on whether to become part of Spain, and the result was 12,138 against and 44 for. But what's nice is you don't make a big fuss about it at all. Except for the fact that one of the main bridges in the centre of town is called the Referendum Gate. And that, I think, leads on to 44 Traitors Avenue. You celebrate the 1967 referendum result with a National Gibraltar Day, a marvellous occasion with spectacular displays, such as the one this year, which was reported like this. Casemate was to be showered in petals dropped from a helicopter. But the helicopter pilot missed his mark and petals ended up in the marketplace, missing the square altogether. Who could possibly have predicted that petals near a helicopter might go in haphazard directions? The way science works never ceases to amaze. Casemate is the main square here, and again, when you've got such a small space to fit in everything that you need for a country, it makes sense if half the main square is used for something essential, like a glass-blowing exhibition. I suppose they show you how to make a bottle that can hold 50 gallons of vodka that you can sell for 40 pence. I've got a book there, one of these books, by a chap called Philip Dennis, and he says, in 1968, the Gibraltar Chronicle caused a demonstration by publishing a letter from Dubs suggesting a bargain with Spain. And that's a sign of a settled and contented community, isn't it? When there's a demonstration because of a letter in the local newspaper. That's the sort of feisty behaviour that suggests you're not so much British and are more like people from hot-headed Mediterranean nations. Such as the Spanish. Now, here is a question I feel I have to ask. Why does anybody bother having a car here? The whole country's about 9 feet long. It could be because petrol, of course, is so cheap here. The oil companies have to sell it at that price, otherwise it would be cheaper to fill the car with vodka. To be fair, not all of you do go everywhere by car. Some of you decide to be healthy and go by moped. There's a book called The Best of Gibraltar, a tourist book, and it says, "Beware of scooters. They make a mockery of the rules of the road." And some people have described the mopeds to me as insects, and they must be annoying if everybody thinks, "I don't mind planes driving up and down the road, it's the bikes that annoy me." I like the moany aspect of it here. I love that. It helps your claim to be British. And I love the way British tourists come here and have their pictures taken next to a phone box. That's a proper holiday when you can go, "Oh, look, they've got the same stuff we have in Croydon." And this is why the Best of Gibraltar tourist book explains proudly, "While tourists on the Costa del Sol have to put up with a breakfast of roll, coffee and fruit juice, in Gibraltar the English breakfast of fried egg, tomato, bacon, sausage, mushrooms, beans and black pudding is served all day." See? Over in Algeciras, they sit there every morning regretting this, going, "I don't know how we put up with it, no black pudding after 11. I mean, maybe the time comes when we have to ask Britain if they take over us as well." But the brilliant thing is you can get away with having a huge English breakfast every day here because you soon burn it off with all the exercise you get from sitting in your car all day. To be fair, you don't just eat English food. The Best of Gibraltar also tells us, I quote, "The national dish is calentina." Have I pronounced it right? Calentita. Calentita. The national dish is calentita from Genoa, best described as a thick pancake served with bread and butter. So this is marvellous. You've gone to every region of Europe and taken the unhealthiest dish they've got and made it your own. "Our favourite drink is melted swan fat." The Best of Gibraltar does have activities to recommend. It says proudly, "For most visitors, a trip to the top of the rock is essential. With luck, a nuclear submarine may be spotted." I don't call it a day out if you've not spotted a nuclear submarine. I was in Paris once, went to the top of the Eiffel Tower, didn't see one. Asked for me money back. The website GibraltarTourism.com says, this is what it says, "Morrison's of Gibraltar is a tourist attraction. Day trip coaches and families from the Costa del Sol travelling by car flood into Gibraltar for their Marmite and Heinz." With people. It's a shock. The people really go, "Oh, it was worth travelling across an entire continent, risking our lives on the world's scariest runway, because we went on a trip to a shop identical to the one we go to in Luton every Friday." And we got a little headset on the way round telling you about it. "On your right, you can see three varieties of toilet duck. British lemon, British pine and British fish and chips." Does it have a gift shop?
It's got a bar.
I know it's got a bar. Whoever told you it was British for Morrison's to have a bar was winding you up. Did they also say it? In Britain, all our Marks and Spencers have a ski slope. I saw one woman in there getting pissed in Morrison's. That's... Oh, no. Effort to keep this Morrison's thing going is extraordinary. There are 18 lorries at any time driving between Britain and Gibraltar to keep the Morrison's stocked. And also some idiot can spend a week getting here on a cruise ship and go, "Oh, look, they've got Frosties," and take them back where they started. I believe a bar in the Morrison's. Do people go out there? Where should we go tonight? Think we maybe go to Morrison's? But Gibraltar has always attracted tourists and celebrity tourists, going back hundreds of years. Writers come here. Lord Byron, celebrated romantic poet, came here on his tour of Europe, and he wrote about it saying, Gibraltar is the dirtiest, most detestable spot in existence. In existence. And being a poet, I expect he added, but you'll see a nuclear sub if luck should come to your assistance. H.G. Wells came here on a romantic weekend with his partner Rebecca, and they enjoyed this idyllic time. He got a sore throat and lay in bed screaming at her, saying the sore throat was going to kill him, until a priest heard him and thought that H.G. Wells was being so horrible he gave Rebecca the money to sail back to London on her own. Just amazing what a little trip to Gibraltar can do to keep a spark going in a relationship. Daniel Defoe, who wrote Robinson Crusoe, said of his visit here, the wine was thought cheap because 5p a pint. But was at the same time so miserably bad that in England we would have thought it dear at tuppence a quart. And in 1844, goes on, William Thackeray said, at evening the place becomes quite romantic. So it's a bit better, isn't it? And then he went on, because it's too dark to see all the dust. Writer and poet seems to have come here and slagged. I bet Pam Ayres has a poem that goes, I don't think I'm keen on Gibraltar. I found monkey hair in the water. I think my weekend would be cheerier if I spent it escaping from Syria. And the caves that we're in are extraordinary. You just sort of stand here amidst these amazing, twirly, psychedelic shapes, and sometimes a drop of water falls on you. And you know in 50,000 years that's going to be a stalagmite and that seat there will be restricted view. So now at this point I'd like to once again talk to Tito. So you give people guided tours around the caves.
We have another cave further down. It's a pity that it's because it's very restricted that not a lot of people see it, but you can see it on the web.
But you can take people down there.
Oh, yes, we do take people. It's an adventure. To me, it's the jewel in the crown of Gibraltar. I don't fit there anymore because as I get older, I'm getting fatter. And I actually have a photo of me stuck in the hole. So not many people know, but we do have a secret tin of Vaseline down there just in case, you know.
That would be so embarrassing, wouldn't it? The person who had to be KY jellied out of the cave.
That is the most beautiful thing we have in Gibraltar to show, and we are very privileged to be in such a place in the world.
All right, thanks very much for Tito. What a great... The Rock of Gibraltar has for thousands of years been guarding the Mediterranean in a way. And by 1300, there were about 1,000 people living here. King Ferdinand IV of Castile began a siege of Gibraltar. But in the end, the siege was won because the Spanish king managed to capture a Morrison's lorry and everyone surrendered. Rather than go without cod in parsley sauce. And then you were happily ruled by Morocco for 600 years. And you can see Morocco clearly from here, and you seem to get on with them well enough. Do you think they mind that you've got a massive gun pointing at them that could take out Tangiers? And then Gibraltar was shared about for a while. When the British started to colonise bits of the world, they took a liking to it here, with explorers writing, we have come across a mountainous stretch of land whose location could make it highly profitable, for it is our belief that one day this land could contain several duty-free shops and a Dorothy Perkins. So the British Navy, along with the Dutch, arrived in 1704 during one of the wars with Spain, and they built a fortress here, and in 1713 they negotiated the Treaty of Utrecht. Do you learn all this stuff at school and all that?
Yes.
And the first condition demanded by the Spanish is if the British were going to have a port here, the ships would have to cross the High Street, giving Spanish citizens... an excuse to be late for work. And then they demanded that Gibraltar, along with Menorca, was annexed to the British Crown as a reward for all the effort that Britain had put in to defeat the Spanish. And the deal was that an extent of country around Gibraltar equal to 2 cannon shots be ceded to England. And I just said, why didn't you use a bigger cannon? You could have had another half mile and put a Lidl on there. One of the clauses that the Spanish demanded was that all Jews and Moors would be removed from Gibraltar, which the British did go along with. But the lesson that Jews and Muslims learnt from this dreadful episode was that from then on they should always stick together in common cause and have never disagreed about anything since. The part of the Treaty of Utrecht still argued about is the sentence that says Gibraltar will be transferred to Britain forever, the full and entire propriety without any territorial jurisdiction. And this may sound definite, but as the book Rock of Contention says, as in many a treaty, the word forever means until such time as we can get it back. So, for example, the current Spanish foreign minister has said, which he said after the Brexit vote, he wants to plant the Spanish flag on the Rock of Gibraltar. And I've asked various people here what they feel about him and had some fascinating replies. There are various theories as to why the British managed to dominate the Spanish at this time. And one possibility was put forward by an American traveller called Henry Field, who came here in the 1800s, and he witnessed the attempts by the Spanish to win Gibraltar back. And he wrote, I quote, "The Spaniards began their fire at daybreak and continued without cessation. Then they suddenly stopped at noon. We wondered why. Then discovered the soldiers were asleep." For what Spaniard may be deprived of his siesta? Now, I'm interested, do you have siestas here?
No.
No. See, now, you've lost out there, haven't you? Now, here, if you're tired in the afternoon, you've got to pop across the border for a kick. But from then on, Gibraltar has, if you studied carefully, had a hint of a military angle. As well as a cannon every 7 inches, you've been involved in every war anywhere. A Confederate ship from the American Civil War ended up here. Nelson visited here on the way to the Battle of Trafalgar, and then the victory came here after the battle with Nelson's body. And Nelson was embalmed in wine and sent back to England, where it said Prime Minister Pitt said, "Bloody hell, what's this cheap muck you've embalmed him in?" And once the Suez Canal was opened, Gibraltar became even more important, as you could pop through to the east from here. So the British built the naval harbour to protect the routes, and a 100-ton gun was built that was claimed is so accurate it can kill a single goose in a flock 4 miles away. Why didn't you use that gun to decide the size of your country? That first street in La Linha that smells of dope, that could have been yours. But the most dramatic episode must have been in the Second World War. The Second World War came as a huge shock to Gibraltar, because as you're 38 years behind the rest of Europe, you hadn't had the First World War yet. Now, at the start of the war, the whole civilian population was evacuated. Thousands were sent away, many of them to Jamaica, which must have complicated the dialect even more, mustn't it? Those ones must have come back making English comments in Spanish in a Jamaican accent. Gibraltar siempre será British. And others were evacuated to rural England, which must have been really unsettling, because there you could wander in the same direction for 2 miles without needing a passport or walking across an international airport. Most evacuees were sent to Casablanca and then eventually to live in camps in Northern Ireland. And I presume the camps were in the Protestant areas, because then you'd be in a small country with Union Jacks flying everywhere. You'd only need a Morrison's, it'd be home from home. Now, the connection with Northern Ireland has stayed strong, because a couple of years ago, Ian Paisley Jr. objected to the Spanish ambassador's attitude towards Gibraltar. Do you all remember this? And told him personally, Ian Paisley Jr. said personally to the ambassador, "Pack your sombrero, sangria and straw donkey and go." I mean, you can't blame him. What else is the son of Ian Paisley going to do? The question is, who thought, relations between Gibraltar and Spain can be sensitive and need delicate handling? Let's send a politician from Northern Ireland who was brought up by Ian Paisley. That should keep things calm. And at the end of the war, gradually everyone who'd been sent away was allowed back here to then once again enjoy a peaceful life half a mile away from a country 10,000 times bigger than you, ruled by General Franco. Franco seemed to get especially cross in 1969 and he closed the border completely. And then someone at the back 3 years later said, "This queue's moving even slower than normal." might pop up the front to see what's going on. Does anyone remember the border being closed?
Yeah.
Was it chaos? Did people like... Well, there's some people who never left for years. Sorry, so what? Sorry, what's your name there?
Gail. I was 8 when the frontier opened. And I remember as a child living in Gibraltar, when we went on holiday, we'd have to get on a boat, cross to Africa, and then take another ferry to Algeciras, go to Spain on holiday, and that was it. It's just taking the long route.
Yeah,
that
sounds hell of a palaver. I'd have just gone to Morrison's myself. Well, thanks very much. Thanks very much, Gail. Eventually, the border was opened in 1985. By now, there was a huge tourist industry. Gibraltar was now on the way to becoming a modern nation with its own supermarket. And something that has amazed me here, though, even in this tiny country, is that there is a quiet bit. At the far end, right opposite Africa, are some cottages. And Rebecca, there, so you live in one of the cottages by the lighthouse.
Yes. They say it's the last house in Europe.
It must be.
Tarifa is more southern, but then there's no houses built on the southern tip.
Oh, yeah, it'd be gutting if someone moves there, wouldn't it? But now also, on the other side of the rock from the town, which is only like 5 minutes walk away, but there's one road and then that's where the beaches are.
Yeah.
There's a sort of culture about the beaches, isn't there, that you have to...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So is that right? So what? How does that work?
You go to the same beach for your whole life, but then there's this... we call it a compromiso, where if you marry someone and they go to Eastern Beach, but your family goes to Caleta, then you're in trouble.
You just love a territorial conflict. No other country in the world could turn going to the beach into ha-ha like Romeo and Juliet. So is there a status? Are there some beaches that are a higher status than others?
Oh. I'm not saying anything.
So it was that a massive fight broke out in an underground cave. Now, one other thing I have to ask you about. I think this is fascinating to anyone who's not here. There are two sorts of wind. Levante Poniente. So Levante is from the east, and then Poniente from the west. There's sort of different sorts of wind. So the Levante wind, you can't put your washing out, is that right?
And everyone, like, has this thing, like Levante hair. Don't go to the hairdressers when there's a Levante, because your hair is just ruined.
Oh, I went to the hairdressers and I just booked it up on a Levante. I don't know what I was thinking. I was told that one effect of a Levante wind is it makes it impossible to make a lemon meringue pie. Have you heard that? That it collapses during a... Has anybody heard that? Or someone's winding me up. How does it make its way into the oven? How does it do that? It comes from Levant. So is this ISIS causing this? Are they wafting the wind? Ha, 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 ha. Now, the brother, the meringue collapse. Ha, ha, ha. Thanks very much to Rebecca. The most amazing discovery in recent years, however, is not how modern Gibraltar is, but how old it is. Because it's now believed that this was where the Neanderthals died out. There was a study from 2000 suggested the last Neanderthals were living in a cave in Gibraltar, maybe this very cave, only 24,000 years ago. Although to them, it will have seemed like 24,038 years ago. But having said that, it looks as if they produced cave art, the Neanderthals, here, which was discovered on the wall of a cave and consists of a series of crosses, which scientists have suggested is a depiction of local Neanderthals waiting for a mammoth to cross the high street. It's almost poetic, I think, that the place where the last Neanderthals lived is the only place in Europe where humans try to live side by side with wild monkeys. It's wonderful, though, when you see how closely they imitate the humans that they see. I saw one open and drink a bottle of Lucozade yesterday. They've got one section at the far end of the rock where they make the other apes queue for 4 hours before letting them in. They just copy everything they see. And they take everything. If you're not careful, they will take your glasses, your wallets, your watch. When a cruise ship comes in, they go to the point where the tourists come up from the cruise ship, ready and waiting for them, because they know they're going to get fed, exactly on time, which is why they've taken the watches in the first place. People know this story from the Olive Press. A woman from Macclesfield has complained about the police in Gibraltar. She went to the local station to report that she'd been sexually assaulted by an ape. And said, while the policeman said he was sorry for my ordeal, he told me monkeys are wild animals and asked, do you think you could pick out the monkey in a lineup? And they go everywhere, these apes. The hotel I stayed in says on its website, we do accept we have an ape problem. And one nicked a croissant off someone having breakfast, one of the apes, which is disgusting. What's wrong with nicking a British breakfast, the traitor? Now you're becoming known for more than apes, though, in Gibraltar, because Gibraltar has a football team that plays in the World Cup. And do you all support the team?
Yes!
They're doing pretty well so far. Gibraltar in the European Championship group, they played 10, lost 10, scored 2 and conceded 56. The manager is ambitious. He said, Liechtenstein are minnows, but they are respected. And that's my aim, to be like Liechtenstein. I can't help thinking, let's not try and run before we can walk. And there's even a football league in Gibraltar with two divisions. But every single match is played at the same ground because there's only room for one pitch. And the ground is right by the airport and right under the rock. And I saw Bruno's Magpies play Boca Juniors in a crowd of about 80. Mike is here, who is the...
Sponsor, let's call it sponsor.
Sponsor, yeah. Of the Bruno Magpies.
Indeed, yeah.
There's this sort of wonderful little attempt to make it more popular by providing not just a ticket, but...
Bruno's, where you went the other night, they had a football team, so we thought, let's sponsor it as a business. And by giving out some free burgers and free beer, it's quite amazing. People come along. And so...
That's wonderful bribery. I mean, Chelsea should do this.
So in that way, we managed to entice people to come and watch a team. And now we've got sort of real fans of a real football club. We still give free burgers and free beer.
Oh, also, what were you telling? Because it's right next to the airport, isn't it? And
the youth teams and the ladies teams play there, and they kept kicking the football over the fence, which meant that some of the planes couldn't land when there was a bouncing ball.
That's brilliant. Thank you very much, Mike. Thanks for the other night. But now this, Gibraltar, I'm disappointed in you. Despite not being an island, Gibraltar is a regular in the Ireland Games, which it won in 2007. So you don't mind being an island when it suits you. But it's worth being a small country down here on your own, because there's a stirring national pride of citizens willing to stand up for the honour of paying sod all tax. And in answer to those who claim there's no culture, many residents find marvellously creative and imaginative ways of smuggling tobacco. It may, of course, be possible that the enormous amount of tobacco bought in Gibraltar isn't for smuggling and it's just for people here to smoke. But according to an EU investigation, every resident of Gibraltar would have to smoke 9 packs a day, including babies. Now, clearly the smugglers don't go across the official border, so they whiz round the sea in little boats, then sell cigarettes on the beach. Now, I should say legally this is only an allegation, because there is no actual proof, apart from that everyone here sees it happening every single day. But this is the future for Spain and Gibraltar. All hostilities will be ended once you get together in harmonious petty crime. So thanks very much to everyone. The last 4 days has been just so wonderfully hospitable, and thanks very much. And I will leave this small but very proud nation with these words, written by H.G. Wells when he was here in his famous work of science fiction, The Time Machine, which most people agreed was inspired by his time on the Rock. As I pass through the streets and converse with the vibrant and vivacious local people, I wonder what it would be like to build a time machine capable of taking you backward in time, exactly 38 years. To a time when apes walked the streets and vodka was fourpence a bucket. Back to when the main square in the country was somewhere to get British fish and chips and watch a bloke wafting bubbles. I began to construct such a contraption, though parts were hard to come by. If only there was a Morrison's, I exclaimed. Eventually, in awe at my new surroundings, I tried to absorb the majesty of my destination, an environment I have never before encountered. Flushed with excitement, I approach a native and exclaim, "Here, mate, could you take a picture of me by this phone box?" Thank you very much.
Mark Steele's In Town was written and performed by Mark Steele, with additional material by Pete Sinclair, and it was produced in Gibraltar by Carl Cooper.